Have you fallen down the cottage industry rabbit hole yet? Well, if not, buckle up, Alice, and click on over to the description in the show notes and sign up. Then you can get ready for the most fun induction into the cult of all things yarn and fiber. This will include, but not limited to, free yarn, free ebooks, patterns, coupons, and much more. You don't want to miss out.
You are listening to Crime, Coffee, and Crafts, a podcast featuring two crafty besties who love true crime and a good cup of joe.
Hey, amateur sleuths, I'm Kristen.
And I'm Heidi.
Welcome back to another episode of your favorite true crime podcast.
I mean, we hope you're, well, you know, listening.
Yeah. So I will say on air, my parents recently drove to San Diego and back.
Oh my.
And yeah, that's what they do.
I mean,
I Daw was saying it's like the 59th trip in the last few years. but anyways, they were catching up on the podcast because they had some time.
Oh shit.
But he had some really great things to say. He was like, from the very beginning to what you guys are doing now, you just have grown so much and you sound so professional, and he loves what we've added to everything. So if you guys are starting from the very, from now, and then you go back, just know that we are a work in progress. So
as all podcasts are.
Yeah.
But every single one of my favorite podcasts started out, you know, the beginning. Yeah, they're like, please don't listen to our first episodes.
We actually would like you to, because it's kind of fun to see. Yeah. And we had some really great stuff at the beginning. But I thought that was nice of Daw to
That's really say cool. That.
I thought it was pretty cool. Although he told me that I'm not allowed to curse like you.
Tell him you're a grown woman. I would have been like, I'm a grown ass woman. Hi, Daw.
I love you, Daw. I'm still going to stick to who I am.
Yep.
But anyway, so that was a side note. I just wanted to give you that feedback.
Fabulous. That's awesome. Yes. I like feedback. It's really hard to get feedback from anyone.
Yeah, nobody really wants to talk to us.
People are like, you want me to do extra anything? So, you know, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have a coffee today.
Yay for coffee.
Yay for coffee. Thank goodness for coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Thank all the spirits out there for the coffee. Woo!
Yes.
All right. It's a local one again. This is La Terza, and I love them so much.
Oh, nice.
This is from their sample pack again. This is the Sumatra Mandeling. Mm-hmm. Fair trade organic. It's got a flavor profile of cocoa, lemongrass, and tart.
Oh.
It's really good. It's a more full-bodied roast, so it's a little right. Better, which I love. So
Yes.
Check them out. There's a direct link in the show notes. For my crafts, I have two crafts today because I have to show off my hat that I already made. I don't think I showed it off yet.
You just showed a picture of something you were creating with that yarn, but that's your spooky yarn, isn't it?
This is my spooky bitch collection. Yeah. And I dyed this yarn, and so, of course, I kept staring at it at the last show I was at. I was like, I just need to keep one of these for myself.
It's perfect spooky Halloween colors.
It really is.
you know, the bits of orange, yeah, the purple and the green and the black. It just really brings it all together. I really like it. You did a really great job.
Ben and I were like kind of laughing because it looks like the weather radar.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Yes.
I'm super excited. A lot of people were also very excited about those yarns. So,
yeah.
I sold out of my sock weight.
Nice.
Yeah. All my sock yarns like flew right out. And I was like, oh, crap. I guess I need to like really do a lot of sock yarn.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah. But my current situation. I am.
Aww.
It's going to be a scarf.
Yeah.
It's like a white tweed.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. And that's just GB yarn. Nothing fancy.
So you didn't make it?
No. No. I wish. Okay. Now we get to the terrible, terrible stuff. And sad, sorry guys, it's another two-parter. I didn't mean for it to be a two-parter, but it is.
So when Heidi and I were talking about it the last couple of days, it's funny because that was the episode I was going to work on.
What the
But I'm okay, I didn't. And then when you told me and I was like, oh, I'm so glad, but it's such a big story.
Oh my God. I cannot believe that that almost happened again. Also, what did you search to find it?
I don't know.
I searched for.
I didn't search anything. I think it was just looking up.
I searched true crime. Specifically for Halloween true crime.
Oh, nice.
Because the last victim was Halloween.
I may have been looking for October. Maybe I was looking for October.
Probably
murders that happened in October. That could have been.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That is crazy. So I'm really glad that it's
hallelujah.
Here. But it's a big case, guys. So
yeah.
Hold on to your butts.
Yeah. So it's the Toolbox Killers, not to be confused with Toy Box Killer.
Mm-hmm.
Killers. So I told somebody I was doing Toolbox and they were like, is that the husband and wife? I'm like, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. But still just as bad. Maybe worse.
Mm-hmm.
Trigger warnings for this one are kidnapping, rape, sadistic torture, murder, attempted suicide. And in part two, there is a suicide. So
gotcha.
That in there as well. So this first part, we're going to get to know them, the early life. The murders we will not get into until part two. That was like the only way I could break it up.
Yeah.
But it had to be done. Okay. So we're going to travel back to 1978. Just think of all the cool cars that were still around.
No, that was
back in the day.
That was when cars were still made out of metal, guys.
Yeah. Not plastic.
Not plastic and computers.
Oh, fucking computers. Oh, they're the worst. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we are at the CMC, which is the California Men's Colony, just outside of San Luis Obispo in California, for anybody's didn't get that. Yeah. There are two absolutely terrifying men here. Unfortunately, they became friends.
Mm.
These two men are Roy Norris and Lawrence Bittaker. Both of them were extremely intelligent, which is pretty scary in itself. Before we get into the crimes they became known for, we're going to learn about their earlier years and what may have led to their future.
Mm.
So first, we will get to know Roy Lewis Norris. Norris was born on February 5th, 1948, in Greeley, Colorado. Colorado.
Colorado.
His parents had a shotgun wedding after his mom realized she was pregnant.
Which so many people did back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Back in those days, there were a lot of social stigmas.
There were social stigmas against being pregnant and having, but nowadays it's probably safer to just get knocked up and not get married.
Yeah, I am a bastard child. And I am proud of it. Yes. Okay. So this next part is a super sad reality. Even though Norris had a lot of extended family members nearby, they never took him in when he needed them. Mm. And his mother was addicted to drugs and was a stay-at-home mom.
His dad, so she was doing drugs all day at home while trying to take... Oh, that's sad.
I don't even think she was trying to take care of him. She was a terrible mom.
They were just...
She was pretty
around
bad.
Each... Yeah.
Yeah. His dad worked in a scrapyard. And Norris was very sadly repeatedly passed back and forth between living at home and living with foster families over and over again throughout his childhood.
Oh, God.
Yeah. None terrible. Of his family took him. He went to foster.
Mm.
And this is the part where I get really angry about our foster system and how the parents' rights are more important than the children's rights.
Yeah,
because you know what?
I have issues with that too.
The kids shouldn't go back to those parents over and over again.
Honestly. Especially if there's a pattern,
you
can't just keep giving this child back to a mother who's clearly not going to take care of them.
It happens all the time.
It does.
It's so sad.
I see it all the time.
Yeah. And this alone fucks up a kid's psyche. I mean, just that one piece of information. Add to this, when he was at home with his biological parents, he was constantly falsely accused of stupid shit. And when he was with fosters, he was neglected, not being properly clothed or fed.
Mm.
He later stated that he had been sexually abused by someone in one of the foster families who was Hispanic, which he claims led to his hatred for Hispanic people, which, that's really scary.
Yeah, that's... Oof.
Yeah, not great.
Mm-mm.
Can't blame a whole group of people for one person's wrongdoing. So at 16 years old, Norris went to visit a female relative and he started making sexual advances.
Yeah, because a lot of times children of sexual abuse become abusers themselves. Right. And because they think that is normal and okay.
Right.
And it's not okay, guys.
Thankfully, that's as far as it went because she actually made him leave and called his dad.
Oh, good.
But his dad threatened to beat him for this.
Not good.
After which, Norris stole his dad's car and attempted suicide by injecting air into an artery in his arm after driving up into the Rocky Mountains.
Ow.
I know.
So trying to give himself a brain aneurysm.
I mean,
if you push air into your veins, it goes up.
Technically, that's how Janis Joplin died. So.
Mm. Yeah, because she had a bad.
It was a bad.
Bad stick.
Bad stick, yeah.
We'll just leave it at that.
Oh, Janis. Anyway, okay. He was later picked up as a runaway and returned to his biological parents yet again. Upon his return, his parents told him that both him and his sister weren't wanted children, obviously, and that they would be getting a divorce as soon as both kids were adolescents. As soon as his sister basically became...
Turned 12.
A teen, they were going to be like, okay, bye.
Because adolescence is 12, 13.
I know, it's sad.
So,
yeah, I just don't even understand people. So about a year after this incident, Norris dropped out of school and joined the Navy.
Hmm.
And yes, he was stationed in San Diego, but this was back in 1965. Thank goodness. He was deployed in 1969 when the American Vietnam War happened. I did read that he never actually saw any active combat during the 4 months that he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And after returning stateside, he was honorably discharged.
Okay.
He only served.
They don't say.
One tour. Yeah.
They don't say but, why he was honorably discharged.
No, but I mean, he was in for 4 years.
Right.
65 to 69. So that's normal. He just didn't want to reenlist. In okay. November of the same year, he was arrested for his first known sex offense. Norris was charged with both assault with attempt to commit rape and rape.
Okay.
Really? So I think they were just like stacking charges on him.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Because
yeah, there was, it was an incident where a woman was alone in her car and Norris had attempted to force himself into her car. So I'm not really sure, like, did he actually get into the car? Did he actually rape her? Or was it attempted rape? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
But that's what I found. So,
okay.
Just a few months after this incident, Norris tried to schmooze his way into a woman's home and attack her, but she declined. So he tried to force his way in. The woman called the cops and Norris was arrested before he could harm her. Thank goodness.
Good.
And not long after this, military psychologists diagnosed Norris with severe schizoid personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They used to diagnose people with that a lot back then.
Yeah, it was the term before schizophrenia.
Yeah. So now it's May of 1970. Norris is out on bail for the previously mentioned charge. He had been stalking a female student on the one campus in San Diego that I will not ever step foot on because of how many incidents that I personally know about.
Yeah.
San Diego State University.
No.
I think we could do like a whole mini series just on that campus.
Probably.
It's pretty bad.
Unfortunately. Yeah. My mom went there.
Well, she's, you know, she's a bad bitch. Hi, Ma.
she was a single mom while Hell she yeah. was getting her, she was working on her degree.
Hell yeah, she was.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he attacked her, he hit her with a rock on the back of her head until she went down to her knees. Norris then began smashing the poor girl's head against the sidewalk while kneeling on her low back.
No.
The interesting thing here that we'll notice with Norris is that he gets off more on the abuse and the fear.
Oh, right.
Than the actual sexual violence.
Yeah. It's
very scary. Now, thankfully, Norris was charged with assault with a deadly weapon and sentenced to 5 years imprisonment at the Atascadero State Hospital. There, he was called a mentally disordered sex offender, which, like, aren't they all?
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes hand in hand.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah.
In 1975, he was released with another 5 years of probation. He was deemed to be of no further danger to others.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
They yeah. were way off base.
Clearly.
Way off base. So a few months after regaining his freedom, Norris was in Redondo Beach.
Oh, we know Redondo well.
He used to live there. When he noticed a 27-year-old woman walking by herself from a restaurant, which, like, everybody does that down there because yeah. it's beach towns. That's what you do. You walk everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I hardly ever drove when I lived
there.
You
didn't really have to because no. everything was right there.
Yeah. Norris offered the woman a ride on his motorcycle, but she said no. So he parked his bike, grabbed the woman by her scarf, and twisted it around her neck. He then told her he was going to rape her and dragged her into some bushes.
Ugh. What a shit bag.
Yeah. This woman didn't resist because she was absolutely fucking terrified. Which, honestly, she probably survived because she didn't resist.
Right.
The woman reported the rape to police, but they never found out who it was. However, this badass lady saw Norris's motorcycle about a month later and took down his license plate number. Gave it to the cops, and he was finally arrested.
Good job. See?
Yeah. So
it pays to pay attention and observe.
Oh, yeah. And
remember things.
If you calm yourself, you can focus.
You can remember lots of things.
Mm-hmm. And you can train yourself to be that way, especially like if you're a freeze kind of person, if you're a flight kind of person, like you can train yourself to chillax, focus, get shit done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Mm-hmm. A year later, he was finally convicted for this rape and sent to CMC, the California Men's Colony.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So now that we've been caught up on Roy Norris, let's get to know his BFF.
Besties.
They're so cute. Lawrence Sigmund Bittaker, also known as Pliers.
Ugh.
We'll get to it.
Yeah, that's quite a nickname there, guy.
There's so much information in this case that made me gag.
Yeah.
And cry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, made me cry. There are not many cases that can make me cry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one's a tough one.
Yeah. So Bittaker was born on September 27th, 1940 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He too was an unwanted child of two people who had chosen not to have children. If you choose not to have children, then don't, you know, just, you know, be precautionary.
Mm-hmm.
As best as you can. But no. He was placed in an orphanage as an infant. Thankfully, he was quickly adopted by Mr. and Mrs. George Bittaker.
Mm-hmm.
His dad worked in aviation, which meant that the family would move around a lot throughout his childhood. Now, there's not really information that would lead me to believe that anything his parents actually did caused him to be who he would be.
Right.
Which means in my brain, this goes back to
born that way.
Biological parents and
right.
DNA is a bitch.
Yeah. Nature.
So, yeah, nature. Nature kind of sucks sometimes.
Because he was nurtured. It seems like he was nurtured.
Yeah. Now he did.
So
he did eventually claim he didn't get enough love at home, but like,
was there just not enough hugs?
I guess.
I mean, hugs really.
Hugs change everything.
They are the best medicine.
Your minimum allotment is 8 hugs per day just to maintain a normal lifestyle. I don't get that many hugs. Unless
I don't
it's my dogs.
Many.
I know, we need more hugs.
Well, you know, with my oldest, she
doesn't hug.
It's yeah. And that's okay. That's part of her autism, but when I get hugs from her, they're even more special.
It means so much more.
Yeah. The little ones, they like to hug a lot.
Yeah.
Especially my baby.
Yeah.
He's a hugger.
She's definitely a hugger.
Yeah. But when they're gone, the dads,
you're like,
I get a lot less hugs.
So sad.
Hugs are good, peeps. Hug your people.
Yeah. But anyways. Only with consent.
Yes, you must ask.
Yeah, don't force it.
Mm-mm.
At the young age of 12, Bittaker was arrested for shoplifting.
So he was a petty criminal at the very beginning.
Yeah, he continued shoplifting over the next 4 years and repeatedly got arrested for it. Bittaker later said he shoplifted because he didn't receive any love at home. Like, really?
Really?
Shoplifting because you're not? No.
I don't think that's a good excuse.
Yeah. Bittaker had a high IQ, which same.
Samesies.
You too. Samesies. Yep. And he thought school was a bore. Same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he dropped out of high school in 1957. Not totally samesies, but almost.
Yeah, I mean, you finished the correspondence, so.
But
yeah.
I was done early.
Yeah.
But I didn't kidnap, rape, torture, or murder people.
No, because you know it's wrong, and you were not going to do that.
Yeah, there's something wrong with these two guys.
Yep.
So at this point in his life, his family actually lived in California because they moved around a lot. Because
they moved around with the aviation, yeah.
Yeah. The year after dropping out of school was filled with drama. So much drama.
Oh.
Bittaker had been arrested for car theft, a hit and run, and for evading arrest. Yeah. So he was subsequently imprisoned at the California Youth Authority until he turned 18.
Mm.
When he got out, he found out his parents had disowned him and moved away without telling him.
Ooh.
His parents who adopted him left him.
Yeah.
His parents who gave birth to him left him. Now I kind of...
A lot of abandonment issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They literally ghosted their kid. And he never saw them again.
Never saw his parents again. Wow. That's... Yeah.
That's fucking gnarly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any parent that could do that. Just so like, bye.
It's sad.
I mean, I've seen it like when we've been, for instance, in the hospital when Dwight had his massive stroke, we were in a trauma center for like traumatic brain injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that was in the room next to us, because it's like a shared room, with just a curtain, he was like 20 something. He was young.
Yeah.
The entire week that we were there, not one single person came to visit him.
No.
It's just heartbreaking.
That is terrible.
It only took a couple days for Bittaker to find trouble again once he was released on parole. He was quickly arrested for transporting a stolen vehicle across state lines, turning that into a federal crime.
Yep.
In August of 1959, he was sentenced to 18 months in prison. Bittaker initially served his sentence in Oklahoma State Reformatory, but was moved to a federal medical center in Springfield, Missouri. When Bittaker was released from prison in 1960, he quickly went back to his crime life, of course.
Oh, sure.
Just a couple months after he was released, he was arrested in LA for robbery. Yeah. So in May of 1961, he was sentenced to 15 years. While he was incarcerated, a psychiatrist evaluated him and diagnosed him as being highly manipulative and described him as having considerable concealed hostility.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
That's a dangerous person.
You'll see just how dangerous this guy is because he scares the absolute shit out of me.
Mm.
And it's different than it was with like Israel Keyes. Israel Keyes was just like, you don't know who the fuck he's going to go after.
Right.
This guy is absolutely a torturous monster.
Mm-hmm.
After serving only 2 years of his 15-year sentence, Bittaker was released on parole in 1963.
Are we still in Missouri?
No, we're in California.
We're back in California.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But he didn't stay out long because he can't. He just can't.
No, he's a criminal for life.
Yeah. In October of 1964, he violated parole and was sent back to prison.
Yeah, good.
And yeah, so fast forward to 1966, two different psychiatrists classified Bittaker as a borderline psychopath, translating to him being highly manipulative and cannot even acknowledge consequences for any of his actions.
Hmm.
His brain is severely broken.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Apparently, Bittaker told one of the psychiatrists that he felt self-important when he committed crimes. He, of course, also blamed his upbringing for his criminal behavior. So he was pressed.
I don't see how you can.
I mean, there's no information on the parents. He was never removed from their home. Nothing ever happened, which, like, I get it. It does happen. Maybe they were abusive. I don't know. We can't really know.
Yeah.
But he was prescribed antipsychotics. Every time I hear or see the word antipsychotics, I just think of one moment in my life and it scares me again.
Oof.
Somebody tried to slip me an antipsychotic as an aspirin for my headache.
Oh.
Yeah.
PTSD.
Yeah. Thankfully, he's no longer with us. He gone. In June of 1967, he was yet again released back into the public. WTF. He was arrested again a couple more times, being released again, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It just kept going.
Continuous cycle of criminal behavior, getting locked up, getting released early, and then, oh, look, we're not reformed. We're going to continue to do criminal behavior.
Yeah. So eventually this did all finally catch up. And he finally got sentenced to between 6 months and 15 years, which is a joke. What
sentence is that? That is crazy.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Sadly, he was released again after only 3 years.
Of course he was. Of course he was released.
Yeah.
Because why not?
Exactly. So now we're in 1974 and he's free and he is about to escalate.
Sounds like it.
So at this point, he is still in my hood, like Redondo Beach area.
Mm-hmm.
Bittaker entered a grocery store and was witnessed stealing a steak by a store employee named Gary Louie. And so So he followed him out of the store into the parking lot and asked him if he had forgotten to pay. Like the nice way of saying. Yeah,
he didn't want to be accusatory.
Exactly. So
I mean, it does happen.
What did Bittaker do though? Didn't say a fucking word and just stabbed him in the chest.
Oh.
That was nice.
I'm sorry, sir.
Yeah. Bittaker then began running away, but two other supermarket employees grabbed him.
He stabbed the man over a steak.
A fucking steak.
Jeez Louise.
Now, thankfully, Gary Louie survived the attack because Bittaker missed his heart when he stabbed him. By like this much.
Wow.
He barely missed it. Bittaker got off way too easy on this. He was charged with assault with a deadly weapon and sent to CMC.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is where our besties meet.
Yes. So we're now at the point where both Norris and Bittaker are both serving time in CMC, and they probably like saw each other in the quad and were like, oh my God, you're so cool.
The stars aligned. Slow motion happened. They walked towards each other.
Oh my gosh.
A firm handshake happened. And then
for anybody who's not watching, Kristen just did a robotic handshake. It was freaking awesome.
It's what I do.
Super cool. But really, they actually didn't become friends immediately.
Oh.
They were sort of acquaintances in 1977. And I think Bittaker was kind of like noticing Norris and like keeping an eye on him and thought maybe like he's a cool dude. Noting that he seemed intelligent and street smart in a prison sort of way. Norris was friendly with biker gangs and was involved in dealing drugs inside the prison.
Sure, why not?
I mean, yeah. Apparently, Norris also knew how to make jewelry, which is how the two men actually became friends.
Was it turquoise jewelry?
Probably. It was probably like puka shells because we're like getting closer to the 80s.
Rocks. We have our rocks necklace.
So Norris actually taught Bittaker how to make jewelry.
Oh.
Which, like, crafting. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good hobby.
Mm-hmm. Too bad it didn't, like, keep them out of trouble. Norris has actually stated that Bittaker has saved him more than a couple of times when other inmates attempted to attack him in prison. By 1978, they were basically best friends. So they had found that they shared interests in sexual violence and misogyny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Norris was sexually aroused by frightening young women, which was obviously what he had been arrested for on several occasions.
Yeah.
While Bittaker, as far as we know, had never sexually assaulted anyone yet.
Mm-hmm.
But he said if he did ever rape a woman, that he would kill her, so there were no witnesses.
Yeah.
So these two shitbags would just like hang out together privately while like everybody else is like doing their other shit. And they would discuss their plans for when they got out because they were supposed to be getting out around the same time.
Did they have a dream board?
Maybe in their minds.
Yeah.
Like they probably did have one in their minds.
Mm-hmm.
So their plans to assault and murder teenage girls once they were both released from prison.
Worst kind of shitbags.
Part of their plan was to murder one girl of each of the teenage years from 13 to 19.
Oh, so they wanted to do it in chronological order of age.
I mean, they didn't want to like go from 13
or they to 14. They just
wanted one of each.
One of each age.
Yeah. So they made a pact to find each other once they were released.
Mm.
What a bond. It's very disturbing. Because when you get released, you're not really supposed to hang out with like
right, it's part of your parole. You can't hang out with other felons and criminals.
Yeah. There's a lot you're not supposed to do when you get out.
Yeah. A lot of people still do. But.
Yeah. So the first to get out was Bittaker. He was released from CMC October 15th, 1978. He immediately went back to LA and got a job as a skilled machinist. This was a well-paying job, paying Bittaker almost $1,000 a week.
Yeah, machinists make pretty good money.
Like 1978, $1,000 a week.
That's good money.
You can't survive on that out there anymore. There's no fucking way.
No.
So Bittaker became friendly with many of his neighbors, and they actually said he was a generous and helpful person.
Mm.
He even donated regularly to the Salvation Army. There was even one time he went and purchased a bunch of fast food and wine to hand out to the homeless people in downtown LA.
Oh.
It's like, those are cool things. Maybe stick to those things, dude.
Maybe do that instead of what you plan to do.
They literally put in here, well, that last part was heartwarming. Don't feel anything for this asshat.
No.
But seriously, don't feel anything for him. He's a piece of
shit. The good things do not outweigh anything bad.
Yeah. So while he's doing all these good things, he's also making sure to keep beer and weed in his motel room. He was technically like out in Burbank, which like, ugh.
Yeah.
Just so teens would always hang out there with the older guy who has weed and beer.
I know another similar serial killer who did that. And
there's a lot. I think gross. A lot of so gross. So gross, dude. Just 3 months after Bittaker got out, Norris was also released on January 15th, 1979. And guess where he moved?
Burbank.
Redondo Beach. Into his mom's home. His mother, who didn't want him.
Oh, weird. Isn't
that wild? Yeah. So he didn't waste time getting back to his rapist ways either. Within a month, he had actually raped a woman and left her stranded in the desert. Oh. Apparently, he didn't get in trouble for it either.
Weird.
He just like told when they were eventually arrested, they
confessed.
He told everything. But I don't want to say too much because we'll get there.
Yes.
So Norris found a job as an electrician in Compton, which, like, wow. But I don't think Compton was bad that back then.
In 78?
79. It's been 78. 79. Yeah, it would have been
it's
bad.
Been, yeah. I mean, it's been rolling for a while.
It's that been way. Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Not long after starting this new job, I just think it's funny, like, as a white dude.
Yeah, I'm scratching my head. Over.
When I lived in LA, all of my guy friends, I wasn't allowed to go with them to Compton. They would not allow me to go with them. I'm like,
what? I went to a really cool indoor swap meet there.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Oh, I miss swap meets.
I know. I do too.
Okay.
Kobe's.
Oh, man. It's so good. Y'all. He's so good.
Oh, my dad would take me there almost every weekend he had me. We would go to the swap meet.
Yes. That is incredible. When I was really young, I used to go with the woman who shall not be named. I will not say her name because she's terrible. But I would go with her. She had a booth that she had a spot there that she would set up. Okay. And I was best friends with her kid.
Yes.
And
yes.
So we would all go together.
Right.
So not long after starting this new job, he received a letter from his BFF, Bittaker.
Ooh.
Pen pals. Oh my God.
Okay. Finally got some correspondence.
Yes. So the two actually met up at a hotel in late February 1979. And it was here that they rehashed their plans. But first, they needed a van.
Oh.
So they put their funds together, and Bittaker went and purchased a 1977 GMC Vandura. So fancy. They were actually pretty nice vans. Yeah. The van only had windows on one side.
Did it have velvet lined seats on the inside?
I wish. That'd be awesome. Shag carpeting. Okay.
Yeah.
The other side had a sliding door, which gave them easy access to grabbing young girls. They nicknamed their van Murder Mac.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Ew.
It was right. Before they kidnapped anyone, they decided they needed to practice and search for secluded areas to do their dirty work. So between February and June of 1979, Norris and Bittaker picked up at least 20 female hitchhikers, none of which were assaulted or anything. They picked them up, gave them rides. They
partied
took note,
with them.
Yeah, they just partied. They took note of what lines worked best to get these girls into their van.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime in April, they found a fire road that was super isolated in the San Gabriel Mountains.
Mm.
Bittaker broke the lock on the gate and replaced it with one of his own.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
They were really planning.
Yeah. And this is where we're going to stop part one.
Oh, I gotta wait.
I mean, you don't, but. Oh, yeah.
Gotta wait a little bit.
Yeah. So next week, we will get right into the murders these two became known for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like there's going to be no nothing. You're just going to get right into it. It's like a hard right turn.
Hard start.
Yeah. Woo! Y'all.
These two are just wackadoos.
prepare yourselves. Yes, prepare yourselves.
Yeah.
Until next time, ta-ta.
For now.
Thanks for listening to Crime, Coffee, and Crafts. If you love our podcast, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. This helps us more than you know. If you really love us and want to support us, go to our website at www.crimecoffeeandcrafts.com. From there, you can join our Patreon, shop our merch, and find us on social media.